Welcome to the Gamer's Guide to Pathfinder with Sean
and Barry.
All right, welcome to another episode of Gamer's Guide to Vehicles and Caravans. What we'll be talking about today, we're going to look at the rules from Ultimate Combat for vehicles, how they can fit in your game, talk about the actual rules, we'll nerd out a little bit on the mechanics themselves. Hopefully you'll walk out of this with a better understanding of how this works and how you might fit them into your game. And we're hoping to also then have time to talk about the new caravan rules that were presented in the Player's Guide for Jade Regent. It's a new mini-game that they presented for that campaign. We're going to talk about how you can, you know, make a good caravan. It is a completely new rule set. It's, you know, related but divorced from the normal rules. So if you want to have a good caravan and do what you can do, hopefully you'll get some pointers here. Before we get into that, though, how are you doing, Barry?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, no problem. I also wanted to give a shout-out on the boards. We found a new home on the gaming shelf of 3.5 Private Sanctuary. Thank you very much, guys, for having us. We are happy to be there. We now have forum that you can come and talk to us on. Tell us what we were wrong about. Tell us how we pronounced archetypes wrong the entire time that we did this. You know, if you have other suggestions, gaming stories, tell us how right we are. Tell us how wrong we are. Argue with us. All of that can be done on the forums there on those boards. We also have one of the best listeners ever, Denim and Leather, on those boards, has produced the wonderful music you hear at the beginning that we've added on. It's amazing that someone cared enough about our podcast to produce that, and we can't thank you enough. He also was the first one, before we had even announced that we were on those boards, went ahead and created a forum because he noticed that Ryan had put up our actual episodes before there was any announcement, before you know anyone should have been able to tell. He somehow saw it. Put up threads that have an actual index of all of our episodes.
Very cool.
Yeah, awesome guy. So I wanted to give you a huge shout out and say thanks, and we appreciate it, and hope you keep listening. For the rest of you, come talk to us on the boards. You know, let us know what's going on. At least I am at this point. We'll see if we can get Barry there on the boards more often.
And, I lurk.
He's a lurker. Anyway, that's enough of that. So let's get right into vehicle rules. Let's start with that. So Barry, what do you think of the new vehicle rules?
Well, the vehicle rules right out of the gate, they do a good job of adding this in, I think, and putting in a little excerpt at the very end of the first section. The last paragraph says, put these in if you can, and if it becomes conflicted, ease of use should always prevail. I really like that they begin the section with that, because I think that whenever you're adding in additional rules, I just wanted to give Paizo props for not forcing it on people. But getting it right into the vehicle basics...
I guess let me stop you for a second. Do you think that also opens up arguments? Or someone's like, yeah, sure, that's what the rules actually say there, but that doesn't make ease of use. My character should be this more powerful. It's easier if my super alchemical engine can be Nova to destroy the dragon, who is the big bad guy in your campaign. Because it makes sense to me. I know it's not in the rules, but it's ease of use. Does that open the door for nerd fights?
I think anything having to do with rules can open the door for nerd fights. In general, if something is an additional or optional rule, it's going to be the DM's choice whether to include it and how much of that to include.
Okay.
Just like a DM would be within his rights to say that in his campaign or his version of Galarian, guns are super ultra rare, so they're only going to be found on, you know, in artifacts, and you'd have to take a specific feat for each one. He can pick any of the, you know, by default in Ultimate Combat it comes at a certain level, but you can alter that level and they provide things to do so. I think that's what they were talking about is, hey, here's a bunch of rules and this is kind of how it works, but use what you can.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to the DM. It's anything. Does the DM allow the bard to abuse the liar of building?
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
So it's ultimately he has to stop the abuse before.
And I guess what I would say about it, and this is coming both as a player and as a DM, it's all about setting expectations. So if you're a DM and you want to use these rules, make sure up front that you tell those characters you're going to be either introducing these rules into the game, or you're going to, at the beginning of the campaign, tell them which rules you're using and which ones you're not, so that there's not confusion about it. You don't want to be a player who builds your character expecting to be able to do some certain trick. Six levels in, he's like, no, that doesn't work. You're like, well, that's what I built the whole freaking character around, you jerk. Why didn't you tell me? I told you I was intending to do this. You know, it's all about setting those expectations. If you're a player and you're building a character to do something, make sure you talk to the GM about it. And likewise, it just goes both ways. And bringing that back to the vehicles, it's the same thing. Use whatever rules you want. I think they're nice, streamlined, good rules. But if you're the DM, make sure, GM, I'm sorry, I'm getting used to Pathfinder still. Make sure you're just clear and upfront about what rules you are going to use. So with that out of the way.
Sure, and to give a non-political answer, I do tend to be a raw guy. So if it has to be one or the other, I would say use them or don't use them. If you're going to use them to full effect.
Well, the beauty of raw is it's the same for everyone.
Sure.
And I don't have a problem with DMs putting their stamp and interpretation on it as long as the players know that. There's nothing worse than finding out that there's a certain interpretation your DM's using and you don't find out until you're in play. Or even worse, it's not consistently applied.
But to answer your question, I haven't found anything in the vehicle rules that allows you to intentionally Nova an alchemical engine, so I don't think it's going to necessarily matter that way. But I know
my campaign.
That was your intention the whole time.
It was.
But getting into the specifics of the vehicle rules, basically how it boils down, different vehicles have different propulsion systems, which really just affect the checks, what it takes as far as the skill to pilot a vehicle, and your default is wisdom. I like the fact that they defaulted to wisdom. Wisdom is, you know...
It's beautiful that they made a system that you don't have to... They said, we want...
You can use skills, but you don't
have to build a character to be a driver.
Absolutely.
Existing stuff that your character's likely to already have is going to let you drive. And if all else fails, wisdom check.
Right.
You're going to have someone in your party who has a wisdom. Most likely.
Yes. So they go over some different propulsion systems, which outline which skills can be used to pilot that vehicle. Talks about what a driver can do as far as using their actions, move actions, or standard actions to initiate movement in the vehicles. I'd say the crunchiest stuff when it comes to how to utilize the vehicles would be the facing forward, right or left. But thankfully, the facing of where you... In combat, you know, where a vehicle is hit, attacked from the side or the back, doesn't affect the armor class or the hardness or the hit points of the vehicle. So, you know, other than where the vehicle is moving and how it's moving during the combat, it doesn't, I think, slow it down too much.
Yeah, it's nice how well, when I was reading this over, how well it's going to fit into an existing fight or encounter without a lot of extra rules. Mm-hmm. They're there, it makes sense. I could see some cinematic cool encounters that could be done with these rule sets. You know, even with just your mule and cart here, that could be a very fun encounter. It could add a lot to the game, but it didn't feel like it was this whole huge, new, confusing set of rules on the top of it. It was just
the chest of gold is in the stagecoach, and the coach is out of control because the driver's dead, and it's racing towards the ravine, and you're trying to catch up to that stagecoach before it goes over the ravine.
Yeah.
But then there's also the competing guys that are also trying to get that, so they're trying to shoot you off your horse while you're getting there, and then once you jump on, some of their guys jump on, and now you're in a fight on the coach. There's some really cool stuff.
Absolutely. There's a lot of fun stuff that you would see in movies that you want to have in your game that these mechanics will help you do without being onerous.
I'm really
happy with it.
I'm really glad that they added these in, just because as much as it would, you know, it may or may not happen a lot in your campaign, you may only have these come up once or twice, but when they do come up, it'll be really fun.
Yeah.
You know, some of the, getting to the different vehicles and their stats, some of them have, you know, a lot of hit points, which makes sense, right? A chariot should have a lot more hit points than a gigantic galley or keelboat. But it's nice because these give crunchy numbers for those of us that want to design a campaign around something. So say I wanted to design a campaign with a seagoing party, and they're going to be checking out all these different islands and hunting for treasure and so on, and maybe it has a few elements similar to the caravan or similar to Kingmaker where you have to take care of this ship. Well, part of the campaign could be how many hit points does your ship have, and your ship is getting attacked, and there's sea monsters that are chewing on the hull. Well, how do I educate that as a DM? I have the giant sea monster. I know how many hit points in the armor class he has, but I don't know what the armor class and the hardness of that long ship is.
What happens if you ram him with the long ship? Ram the sea monster. How do you educate that?
And exactly.
Somebody gets here. Yeah.
Right. And so I'm very happy that these rules exist because they allow for the crunchiness of the combat if you need it.
That said, I'd also say it's a very dry read. I know that sounds bad, because I was just nerding out on how awesome it was, and I was imagining different stuff I could do with it as a DM and make it in my... But there's nothing here that's whiz-bang flashy. It's all just solid, good stuff. It really... Man, I know I often can be a bit harsh on the designers and stuff, but I have to give them full props on this one.
I think they did a really good job. And there's nothing... I don't know, if you were going to be disappointed at all, there's no great benefit to riding a chariot over riding a horse.
Sure.
Whereas we know in the ancient world, chariots were just these nightmare engines of destruction.
Well, there was the whole, you know, when stirrups got around, made a difference too, that sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, we could argue about that, I think, for a while. Like we could about any of these ancient world things.
Sure goes. So... Anyways, but all in all, I guess there's not a whole lot of things to say about the vehicle rules other than they are very specific. I would check them out, give them a look, see how they can incorporate. One thing that I would say, just as kind of a general DM advice, and also, I guess, player advice, there is a, you know, I wouldn't look at these as, hey, this is something I have to add in, and I definitely wouldn't allow it to be something that's going to bog down the game on the fly, and I think that's what they intended with the first paragraph that I mentioned.
Right.
Don't let something that just happens in the spur of a moment become, oh my god, we have to open up the Ultimate Combat and look at all these rules. I think that is a great tool if you plan the adventure, if you plan that chase with the out-of-control stagecoach with this chest of gold, if you plan on, you know, Jack the Ripper's in this coach and they have to fight him on the coach... If you can craft that as a DM, work those rules into it.
Mm-hmm. Know what the rules are ahead of time so you're familiar with it. If you're a player, same advice in a way. I mean, you don't know what the specific encounters are going to be, but I would take the time to familiarize yourself with these rules. They're not difficult as a player. You just know those basic rules, how they work, so that when it comes up, when your DM decides to throw in that encounter with that stagecoach, you're not taken out of the encounter to try and figure out rules, so 15 minutes are spent learning that. Take the time during the downtime when you're not actually in the middle of a game to understand the rules. And it's not a huge long read. You don't need to read every stat block. Get to know the basics of the rules and how they work. You don't need to build a character to do this.
No skilled driver or expert driver would be recommended, I think.
Yeah, so there are feats that they give in the book that can help with things. And I think before we started the podcast, Barry just nailed this on the head. These are NPC feats. They're great for NPCs. And then I wouldn't even give it to my cohort. It's a, you know, the level one guy can take those because he's a driver. That's what he does.
Absolutely.
And that's fine.
Your followers can have them. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a follower driver, good thing to have.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't build your character around using these, and you don't need to.
That's nor would the I. The flip side, though, is if for some reason you have that wild hair and you have this great idea, if you analyze it to the point and you say, I want to build a character that's this traveling gypsy guy, and I have this stagecoach, and I'm going to force my DM to work in my gypsy coach everywhere I go, and you think that you're going to be driving enough that these one or two feats are worth it to you...
Say one out of every four encounters involves your stagecoach.
Right.
Or then, if you're playing, then those feats could be worth it.
Right, you're playing Kingmaker, so as much as the guy on the mount gets to do his stuff, you could do the same stuff because your mount is attached to a cart or whatnot.
Sure.
You know, these feats are there, so they cover their bases... You can use them if you want to, but it's not necessary. So yeah. I wouldn't do it either, but it's just, I'd just like to add that in, that it's there.
It's there as an option for you, but I don't recommend it.
Yeah. Pretty much a role-playing feat. It's an NPC feat.
Sure.
So, all right. So I guess moving into caravans.
All right, so the caravan rules, moving right into that. As I said earlier, this is from the Jade Regents Player Guide. It is, all the rules for the caravan are right there in the player's guide. It's a free download. If you don't have it, feel free to go out, follow along with us. Read it, incorporate it into other games, that sort of thing. It's there if you want it. You can make up a choice after listening to this as well. If you're a player in the Jade Regent game, it's very likely you're going to be doing this. Knowing how the actual rules work will help you in that game, and it's a completely different rule system. So essentially what this is, if you think of, I guess we've all seen Raiders of the Lost Ark and any of the Indiana Jones movies, he gets on a plane, suddenly you flash to a map, you see the little dotted line going to the next place, the plane's going to crash somewhere, so suddenly there's a little flash and you're into that encounter scene. That's kind of what this is. You're starting out at one location. Your caravan has its own character sheet. You're now in a sub-game.
Yes.
That's going on. It eats a certain amount of food as it goes. if it gets in a fight, it has its own way of resolving that fight that's completely different, that doesn't use much of what's on your character sheet at all. Once you get to your destination, you're back into normal D&D. So it's very much a mini game within D&D. And we'll get to whether or not we like that or what our recommendations to a DM would be, but it's very likely if you're running Jade Regent that this is what your DM's going with. So if you're a DM, you should understand how it works. If you're a player, you should understand how it works. So it should be useful. And so we'll go from there. So like I said, the caravan is its own character. We went through, we tried a couple different ways of making caravans. We kind of ended up deciding and going, well, we're going to call it the Flytrap. We'll talk about why here in a second and what we did to make that. But let's talk about what they are. So the caravan itself is made up of, shockingly enough, wagons. You have a maximum base set of 5 wagons that you can have in your caravan. The caravan you're given in the adventure starts with 3 wagons. You also get 2,000 gold, and that's a little bit of a spoiler. It doesn't say that in the player's guide. It does say that in the adventure. So, hey, guys, there's going to be spoilers back there.
So you can basically have 5 wagons from the get-go.
Yes, you can absolutely have 5 wagons. Not necessarily the best wagons, not necessarily the ones that have all the perks and bonuses, but you can absolutely have 5 wagons, which I would recommend doing. So we're going to be improving this base, but you start out with 3 with a max of 5. You start out with a covered wagon, a fortune teller's wagon, and a supply wagon. These are kind of your basic things. As you would imagine, supply wagon hauls more stuff than it does people. Covered wagon holds more people than it does stuff. Fortune teller's wagon, because it's a Virizion caravan, you need a fortune teller, otherwise you get minuses. It's kind of what that boils down to.
They need their fortune teller.
Yeah, it's culturally necessary. It works in the story as well, so it's happy to be there. If you're porting this to another system, though, you may want to go in and tweak the fortune teller bit.
Right. If we go sci-fi, this is your navigator.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Yeah, I mean, incorporate it some other way, but it's... Actually, that's a really good idea, skinning this to other stuff. Hey, there we go. We'll talk about that, too.
Check the Spit Skinning Podcast.
That's right. just a real quick overview of the different wagons, then. So we just talked about those. There's also an armored wagon. It's basically the exact same as our supply wagon.
Supply wagon.
Except it also gives you a +3 bonus to AC. There's not a lot of ways to bump up your AC. This is a big one. You can't afford it right off the bat, though, so you're not going to have these. But eventually, these are great wagons to have instead of supply wagons. There's no reason not to go with them if you can afford it, but we're going to get into what you can afford and how and what my theory on that is in a second. There's also a horse train. Horse train is just lots of extra horses. It gives your base speed raises if you have a horse train, but it does count as a wagon. So if you have a horse train and 4 wagons, you're at your max of 5. It has consumption as well. You can have some people ride on it because they can ride the horses. But in general, its main point is to speed up your wagon. I'm not a big fan of speeding stuff up. We'll talk about why in just a minute. But that's what this does. You have the prisoner wagon, which is actually one of the interesting ones to me because its special benefit is that it adds to security. And we're going to talk about what security is and other things here in just a second. But the hidden bonus of a prisoner wagon is you do better repairs if you have a prisoner wagon than if you don't. Because it's a security check. So one of the ways that you can maximize the amount of damage you can repair is to have a prisoner wagon.
Hey, it totally makes sense, right? It's like having like penal workers.
That,
right?
Yeah, actually a really good way to bring it out. Say, hey, I know you're the prisoner. Get out here and lift. You know? I like that. Damn, you're good to have around. It also has a very large number of hit points. So a prisoner wagon's a good one to have in your train. You can have up to 2 of them.
Because all the hit points are pooled. So yes. Your caravan has total hit points. All of the
Each wagon adds to that total.
Right.
Your total is going to be a lot higher than the things you fight, which again we'll get into when we get into combat. And so that's one of the ways to balance it out.
It's not unlike, imagine the party is driving a giant automaton or something. And like a giant, you have generally low AC and tons of hit points. And so you kind of just wade through things.
Yeah.
You're going to be getting attacked by various things, and they're going to nickel and dime you, but you should. And I think that they built it that way. They built it so that unless things go horribly, horribly wrong, you should be able to make it to the next checkpoint.
Yes. It's all a question of how much should you have to spend in repairs to get there.
Right.
And are you going to stop and repair, or are you going to wait till you get to the next place? If you wait too much... And then you get attacked again. Do you still have enough to keep going after the second attack or third attack or whatever? So it's certainly something to keep in mind.
Do you lose some people along the way? Does the eagle swoop down and take your kid? It's basically Oregon Trail in Pathfinder.
That's exactly what this is. Ford the river! Yeah, it's exactly what it is. So just to finish up the wagons real quick, really the only one we haven't talked about yet is the royal carriage. It's a lot like a covered wagon, with the exception that this one carries slightly less people, and it gives you a bonus to your resolve. We'll talk about that later. Having one of these, which is the limit, in your caravan is a good idea. You don't need it for the first few levels, which is good. They're kind of spendy. But basically, I'm not going to try and buff up my resolve at all, except through throwing this on there. And then you have situational ways to raise it if it becomes necessary. But there's not much else you need to do except throw in a royal carriage. It carries four people, so your party can ride around in style and say, sorry, other people, this is our carriage. The rest of you riding the covered wagon are on mules.
That's right. So touching back on how Sean opened this up about the Indiana Jones, you're watching it plot the dot, dot, dot on the map. I think this is one of those things that having one of those maps, if you have the ability to somehow print out a gigantic map of Varisia,
you can buy map packs. And while I think map packs are cool for the adventure paths, I almost think it's absolutely necessary if you're doing one of these. I was being literal in that you should be doing that. If you're playing this subsystem, actually be dot, dot, dotting on that map so people can see where your caravan has gone, where it's going to. You know, have it on a cork board and you can stick in pins
and things. And
let's say this is your destination, this is where you came from, and here's where the encounter is taking place. You need to give the players the feel of a journey at the same time you're doing this. And I think using this subsystem, that's going to be the best way to do that, is actually have a map.
Right. And then it's fun because you could work inside adventures if you chose to, if you're the kind of DM that maybe chooses to run slower XP or for whatever reason. Having that plotted on the map allows them to stop the caravan and go, you know, off course, or like the players can break away from the caravan and go explore an area because they think it's interesting for whatever reason. It just helps to kind of make everything coalesce and come into, you know, a big, broad, spanning campaign.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So I think at this point I want to jump back for a second, and let's actually talk about what is a caravan, what makes it up. So we talked about the wagons themselves. You also have travelers, which will have jobs. You're also going to have stuff on the caravans that can add to the caravan, and you can have feats. Your caravan will have its own feats. But I want to talk about how the statistics for the caravan work. So you have four primary statistics: offense, which is going to be basically a lot like base attack bonus.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have derived statistics from them, and an attack is the one that comes directly from offense. But other things can add to your attack. So you can have, you know, just like you could have a +5 weapon, you can have other bonuses that add to your attack. It doesn't change your BAB. Offense is like your caravan's BAB.
Mm-hmm.
Defense adds directly into AC. A little different there because there's not tons of armor and stuff to put on your caravan, but it's very much like the dex bonus sort of thing, kind of. not as good an analog as offense was to BAB, but that's as close as we're going to get. Basically, defense will add to your caravan's AC. Mobility, this is going to add directly into your caravan's security. Security is pretty much perception. It's what you're going to roll to find out if your caravan's surprised, that sort of thing.
You roll it a lot.
It will be one of the most commonly rolled things. In those cases, it's not a huge deal if you fail. You'll get some bonuses in the first round of combat if you do. It's also, for some reason, how you repair your caravan. There's a security check, and whatever you roll is the number of hit points you healed your caravan on that repair check. So maxing out security, which isn't hard to do, and bumping it up, a lot of things will bump up security, and we'll get into all that, but it's a good way to make sure you're doing repairs. So having a good security is, in my mind, one of your primary stats. And mobility does go directly into that. My build is actually not going to be bumping up mobility much, but we'll talk about other ways to get your security up. And finally, we have morale is the last of the primary stats, and it goes directly into what's called resolve. And resolve is anything that's going to be, you know, fear checks or do my people revolt and get mad at me. You know, it's any of those type of things. And we'll talk about that in a little bit too. But that's kind of how it works. Those four primary stats can only be raised in a couple of ways. They all start out at 1. They have a maximum of 10. If you had a caravan that had a 10 in any of these stats, it's like the best caravan ever at whatever it is you have 10 in. However, it's not super easy to raise those stats. There's not a lot of ways. There is ways to raise the secondary stats, the derived stats from those. So all your primary stats start out at 1. You get 3 initial points when you first start a caravan that you can put in any of these you want. My recommendation for my build is, and I should say our build. We came up with this together. I'm being a jerk there. It's our build. We tested out some stuff. We came out with it. We basically decided our goals for a caravan when we were building a caravan in our heads was we wanted the caravan to be self-sufficient. We don't want it to take party treasure to keep making it better so that this mini game can go on, but you're not as good in the main game. We want it to be as self-sufficient as possible. So how can it make money? Taking an initial look at the trading rules, you're not...
Really hard to make money.
Yeah, you're not making much money. Not enough that you're going to be keeping up with the improvements in your caravan that you need to do. So we kind of wrote off being a trading caravan very quickly as an option, which is too bad, because I think that would be fun. I would like a trading caravan, a little sim going on where I've got trading stuff going on.
It could be
fun
if that was your thing, but it doesn't work mechanically in this.
In this case, it isn't an option.
It's much better to kill things and take treasure.
Exactly. So we wrote that off quickly. You then have a couple options. The other way to make money is when you kill stuff, they drop goods. They drop a bucket of stuff that's worth gold pieces.
A bucket of food.
Whatever, yeah. And so that's how we're going to make our money, is beating things.
Hence the flytrap.
Exactly. So our job is to actually have them attack us. To that end, we didn't want to get faster.
Right. We want to move slowly.
Yep. The base rate is 32 miles per day for a caravan. There's ways you can speed up the whole caravan. You can spend money on that. You could make a caravan that's really fast so you have a less chance of getting an encounter, and you could run away from every encounter you get so you don't take damage and just get to the next encounter as fast as possible, the next normal game encounter.
And that's totally valid, too. If you really don't enjoy the caravan rules that much and you just want to get through it,
then that's what you should build.
Yeah, go ahead and max it out and just hope that you don't roll crappy.
Yeah, and so then in that case, I think it's a security check to run away. You want to max out your security. You want to max out the speed on your caravan and just haul balls.
But that being said, if you really, really don't enjoy that part of the campaign, either A, maybe Jade Region isn't for you, and B, I'd say just talk to your GM.
Yeah.
As long as you're not completely diametrically opposed to what's fun between the players and the GM, if the GM is okay with that, maybe just speed it up and just say, okay, well, you guys travel for so long, and yep. Here we go.
There's no reason it couldn't be a paragraph of stuff that GM describes the journey, and you're done. You don't have to do this.
I'll get into that a little bit more a little bit later.
Yeah, agreed. So our theory here then is we want to be slow, have the encounters, and we want to beat up the bad guys. We want to kill their stuff and take their loot. That's right. Our plan.
Mm-hmm.
The two ways we thought of to do that is either having a really high AC, so they have a hard time hitting us, we take the least amount of damage possible, and then we slowly wear them down while we're taking less damage, or we do lots of damage right off the bat and kill them before they have a chance to do much damage to us. When we tried to model it, we couldn't get enough AC to make that side of the plan work.
The final nail in the coffin to that is you get so many hit points and you're able to add hit points so easily that, say spending a feat to raise your AC 1 or your defense 1, you could spend a feat to increase how many wagons are in your caravan and then add those caravans with a low amount of gold. That's going to increase your hit points so much that it doesn't really matter if you're getting hit because your AC is low. You just by attrition you win.
Yep.
You're doing maybe even less than they're doing, but you're going to last longer because you have more hit points at the end of the battle. You got their stuff. You spend some of what you made on repairing your hit points, and you're good to go.
And again, our goal is to have this thing as self-sufficient as possible.
So that the players aren't dumping in their personal money.
So we then modeled it as a how much damage can we make this thing do? A caravan does 1 point of damage per level of the caravan. The caravan's level is whatever the level of your highest PC is. And plus 1d6 damage. So that's the base damage any caravan does. There's a couple feats you can take that increase that. And we'll talk about specifically what those are. But basically, that's what we end up doing, is doing what we can to get that damage we do up as high as possible, as fast as possible, so that we can kill them before they have a chance to do much damage to us. And so that's our goal when we build this. And keep that in mind as we're talking about any of the stuff that we're adding to that.
Right. In playtesting, right out of the gate at level 2, which is actually what level you'll be when you get the caravan, we just completely ate goblins. They attacked. It did nothing. We likely killed them before they even got to swing.
Or if they swing once, it doesn't matter. They're just a non-issue. They're just free money.
The level 2 caravan was able to beat up through level 7 encounters, and you could get through it okay.
Right.
And still repair yourself and still move on without eating player money.
Yeah.
And that was our goal. The caravan's going to go up higher level than that, so it should do even better, which is fine. I'm happy with it. I like this. Based on our playtesting, and I could only playtest it up through about level 7, since there's only 2 books out from Jade Regent so far, as of the time of this recording. But it seems solid for those. So actually playing it against the encounters that you could hit, this is a solid way to work it. So the next thing we need to talk about then is travelers. Obviously, a traveler is anyone who rides with the caravan. It's pretty simple when you think of it that way. Every traveler has a job. Each job gives some other statistic to the caravan. There's maxes on all of them. The first job I guess I want to talk about is hero. Hero is any of the PCs, flat out. However, you can only have a max of 4 heroes. Additionally, you get a +1 on attack, security, and resolve from the number of heroes you have, up to +4, which means if you have a party of 3, you're actually penalized with the caravan rules as they stand. So if you're a GM and you're running Jade Regent and you have only a party of 2 or 3, I would consider just making that a flat 4 so you're not punishing your party, or let them have one of the NPCs be considered a hero.
Right. Any of the named NPCs, I think it actually says that the named NPC can function as a hero.
Yeah, well, the trick is there, you wouldn't want them to be considered part of the party to adjust the level of the caravan. Because especially when you start out, there's a level 5 NPC, so you don't want the caravan to jump to level 5. You want it to stay with the PCs.
Well, I think party level is different. I mean, that mechanic just says that you can count one of the named NPCs. It's still an NPC. It's not a PC.
Right. Well, the named NPCs are a little different. I guess that's our next thing. The named NPCs, there's 4 of them who come with you at the beginning of the campaign. You find others throughout the course of the campaign who'll come with you. They're awesome. They're cool. They can fill a variety of these roles depending on what skills and stuff they have. They don't charge you money.
Yeah.
Which is a nice thing, because you can hire people to do stuff for you, and it costs you money. The more named NPCs you have, the less money you're putting out, the more self-sufficient you are as a caravan.
Right. I'd like to touch on something real quick, too, because I know on the boards there was some talk of how that works with, say, I think it was Shalelu is level 5, and does that make your caravan more? And I'd like to just, I think, logically put that to rest really quick. If it's an NPC, it's an NPC.
Yep,
so it's not part of the party. Hanging out with the party does not mean that it is a player character. So it doesn't matter in what context or how much that character hangs out. If it's an NPC, if now that one player has said, I want to play Shalelu, and the DM has said, okay, that is your character, then that's a different story.
Well, also hopefully that DM's smart enough to say, fine, create a second level ranger or whatever.
And call her that.
Shalelu. Yeah.
Exactly.
Here's your backstory, but...
Right, and lower the level, otherwise he's playing favorites by letting somebody be, 4 levels above everybody else.
Right.
But in that case, it's no longer an NPC. So the talk that was on there about, does that raise your caravan rules? No. It says player. It says of the party.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that
I don't see really how it was an issue, but it is interesting that
it came up at all.
Try to find things that don't really exist. But anyways, getting back to what you were saying.
So the rest of the jobs, the rest of the jobs, there is a base max of +5 that you can get from the jobs. Each of the jobs adds a +1 typically to something. There's feats you can take that raise that max up higher, which is a cool way to do things, but that +5 to start with is what you need to know. You have that hard max, and you have the +4 hard max from heroes. Heroes can have 2 jobs, hero, and then anything else. So heroes just sort of, it's always there. You almost don't even have to think about it. Your party's just getting that +4 to those 3 stats, and off you run. Notably, it doesn't add to AC, so that's one more reason it was hard to get AC up. Mm-hmm. So talking about the jobs themselves, I'm just going to go alphabetically down this list. We're going to talk about each of them has a requirement in order for someone has to have this skill in order to have that job and gain the benefit from it. So just going alphabetically, we have the cook. The cook reduces your consumption by 2. Every wagon has a consumption score, and every traveler in your caravan adds 1 to consumption. Everyone's got to eat. There's stuff you can bring with you that takes up cargo space for each piece of cargo that is food. There's 10 pieces of food in that 1 cargo space. So the lower you can get that, the further you can go without having to buy food or hunt for food. So a cook comes in, that person's a cook, they still have a consumption themselves, but they lower the consumption by 2. So essentially they net a negative one consumption. They cost 10 gold pieces to have on staff, so it's one of the cheapest things you can hire. Because of that, if you look at the cost, they basically will save over the course of 1 month. All the prices are based on a month. So over the course of 1 month, they cost you 10 gold. They save you 30 consumption, which is 3 units of
they save stores. Two consumption. Right.
Well, they're taking up one themselves. So if you hire a cook just to be there,
right. So adding one consumption. They only save you one then.
Right.
No, consumption is 25 gold each, correct?
Per day.
Per day.
Well, no, so per day you're getting one, you're taking one consumption off of your caravan.
I see.
So if I had a caravan that's got 15 consumption mm-hmm. currently, I add a cook to it, he adds one consumption and then takes off two, so I net 14, right? Right? Gotcha. So that saves me one unit of food per day.
Per day.
Right? Okay. So over the course of the month, that 30 units of food, which is the same since every 10 units is one store of stores right. is one of the things you can have on your caravan.
Right.
Each stores costs you, is it 25 or 15 gold? Let me look that
up. I said it was 25. That's where I was getting confused between the 25 and the 30. You were talking about units, so I was thinking gold.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stores cost 5 gold.
Mm.
So because you're saving 30 stores, or I'm sorry, you 30. So you're saving 15 gold. He's costing you 10 gold. Having a cook on board saves you 5 gold a month.
Not a bad filler.
It's a good filler. It's not a good end-all, be-all of it. If you don't have a reason for the... Basically, a cook is I have empty seats, fill them with a cook so things are cheaper. Is really what it comes out to be.
They're not... When you need seats, kick the cook out. Sorry, dude, you need to learn to hunt.
That's right. Yeah, he's gone. And generally, any of your named NPCs or your PCs aren't going to serve as a cook because you got better things for them to do that are
like being a guard.
Being a guard, which costs 100 gold. And we'll get to that in just a second. So I guess the last thing on cooks, not surprisingly, you have to have a skill. Any of these requirements, it only requires 1 point in that skill, which is interesting because it now means dipping 1 point in skills is useful again. It gives you a numerical advantage to do so.
In this adventure path.
In this adventure path. If you want your character to be able to serve as a cook, dip 1 point into profession baker, brewer, cook, fisherman, gardener, innkeeper, and tavern keeper. As long as you have one of those, you can serve as a cook. And that's basically all there is to a cook. So like we said, to me, they're a filler spot. If you got empty seats, fill it with a cook. Next is the driver. You need one driver per wagon. That's it. There's nothing more to them other than you have to have them. You need one. Don't have any extra. You need one per driver. It's worth hiring these guys instead of using your named NPCs, assuming you have the room, because again, they're only 10 gold pieces a month versus the other thing. So if your named NPCs can serve as a different thing besides a driver, it's better to use them as that. Anyone who has one rank in handle animal or profession driver can be a driver, which is cool. It doesn't take much to do it. Again,
handle animals is worth a dip anyway. Thing. Yeah.
Next is entertainer. These guys are very situational. This is the skill. Basically, what they do is they add a +1 circumstance bonus to your resolve. Again, up to that maximum +5. You don't necessarily need a high resolve at all times unless you start getting unrest. However, if you have a high resolve, you cannot get the unrest in the first place. But if you have the unrest, you can negate it by having a higher resolve. So you don't get the minuses. So I would not worry about bumping up your resolve very high until you get a minus. And then you can throw someone on entertainer until you have time to go to town, rest for a while, and get rid of the the resolve. So to me, entertainer is not something my people are going to be doing unless I'm getting a minus from an unrest. And then I'm going to throw in some entertainers. I'm going to switch people to that. So it'd be nice to have people who can do that. There is at least one person. There are two people who can serve this in your NPCs. One of them, she can be an entertainer straight up. The other one is a spellcaster. We'll get to that in a second, where they can do all sorts of anything. And so it'd be good if your party members, those who can't cast spells, should look at dipping into the ability to switch themselves to this so they can get to the next settlement long enough if for some ungodly reason unrest has become a problem. So entertainer is a great thing to have the ability to switch off to, but it's not a focus. Next, you have fortune teller. We talked about if you don't have one, you get minuses. That's the biggest thing. Anyone who's a spellcaster can be a fortune teller, so it's not going to be hard to have someone who does that. There's already one of the NPCs is pretty much tailor-made to be the fortune teller. That's pretty much what she is. there is a bonus once per week. You can reroll, you know, get a second roll on something and take that result instead, which is great. You roll twice and take the better result, I guess is a better way of putting it. As long as you can cast, I guess, divination spells specifically you have to be able to cast. But it doesn't matter if you're a wizard, it doesn't matter if you're a cleric, it doesn't matter if you're a bard. Any of those can do it just fine. So it doesn't take much to have this, and you have to have the roll filled, but it's not something you really have to worry about that all that much. Unless, if you only had one person who could do it, and that person switched off to being the healer or something, which we'll get to in a second, you want someone else to be able to fill it. So just make sure you have a couple people who can do it, which even with just the NPCs you do, I don't think this is going to be a problem, not something to worry about.
I want the rerolls for when the random roll is someone stealing from your caravan in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Unfortunately, it only lets you reroll specific attack, security, and resolve checks, not encounter checks.
Oh, darn. that sucks.
That would be nice,
though. That's like my number one reason for wanting a high security is you can't really battle that encounter very easily. You want to avoid it with a high security perception check, basically.
Yeah. And it's such a security, so easy to bump up. And like I said, it's also good for those repairs. It's worth bumping up that sure. I don't think we're going to have a problem. And we'll get to that
here. If nothing else, you get to reroll the repair. So it's good to have that guy on board.
Yes. Additionally, only PCs and named NPCs can be the fortune teller. You can't hire a fortune teller to go with you. So, again, it's not much of a problem, though. It's not
I'm
really
pretty sure someone in the party is going to cast it.
Cool. So guards, then, is the next role. These guys help defend your caravan. They're +1 circumstance to your offense score, +1 to your security checks to avoid being surprised, which can be really useful. However, they're very spendy. They're one of the two most expensive of any guard or of any hired help you can get on the caravan. So if you can, you want to fill these roles with PCs or named NPCs who you don't have to pay. Again, you know, hire caravan drivers and make the NPC who can be a caravan driver become a guard. Saves you 90 gold a month. It's a no-brainer. You definitely want to do that. Then we have the guide. This is another one of those that is expensive. It's one of the two big ones. It is something that you definitely want to keep in mind. It gives you a +1 circumstance bonus on security checks. Again, remember you can only have up to a +5 circumstance bonus total. So if you have a bunch from guards, you have a bunch from other stuff, it's not going to help you. So generally, I don't think I would have guides out there doing stuff. The exception is when you stop to heal, or repair, I should say. Because it's a security check, not just against surprise, it counts for healing, too. So your people who can't help, you know, repair your wagon should be out there making sure no one's going to attack you.
I'm wondering if it's...
And you actually repair more.
I'm wondering if it's a design flaw. I'm really not liking how the security helping the repair. I understand the word security lends itself to the idea of maintaining your wagons, which keep people secure. But it just... To me, I feel like from a game balance point of view, the lack of things that are devoted to or come from the defense score, for me, if I was on the design chair, I think I would have tied in the repair to the defense. It seems natural. Defense is armor. Defense is kind of like structure.
Kind of makes sense, yeah.
And I think it would help to balance out the spread of the stats. Now, that being said, there may not be enough things, as we found to buff AC, making it... mad, if you will, if there's, you know, we have to worry about spreading out our feats and things because we have all of these stats. But I think that's what, if a system is designed well, that's what it makes you want to do. It makes you have to make those choices between what you specialize in. Are you really good at destroying things? Are you really good at moving fast? Are you really good at defending and repairing? And I think...
that would make sense to me. Yeah. It really does. If I had to say that there was one hole in these... rules, I would agree that probably is it. The rest of it, I mean, it's pretty simple. Nothing's crazy, but for the rest of it, it all makes sense. Security is described as your caravan's ability to avoid physical danger, such as a landslide, a muddy section of road, or a forest fire. It's not described as, which would make sense with your guides. You know, hey, there's a mudslide coming. You probably shouldn't go there. Makes sense, right?
Right.
Your guides out there, I guess, make sure that the Wainwright is not distracted by people coming in and attacking him. I don't know. I don't have a good reason that it's a security check for the repairs, but it is.
Yeah. The other design flaw, obviously, is the no-name union thing. Once you get a name, you're kicked out of the no-name union.
That's right. But, yeah, you don't die if the wagon gets destroyed, so it's probably worth not being in the Union. Just saying. Skipping ahead then. Healers. This is basically this person, if you have a healer in your caravan, they can provide long-term care, just like the normal skill from heal, to anyone who's in the caravan if they spend a night in the wagon. That's, you know, makes sense. It's a good deal. As you get higher level, just like the heal skill, it's not going to matter as much. And you don't need it most of the time. So it's something that you're going to have someone who can swap into that role, so when it's necessary, they swap into that role, and it's not a big deal. So it's not really something to worry about. We already talked about heroes, so I'm not going to rehash those here, which brings us to passengers, which are useless. Well, I mean, I don't want to be a jerk, but yeah, I mean, they do nothing. You don't have to pay them. Generally, they pay you.
Right.
If you know,
do they actually pay you?
Some will, some won't. So.
So it's situational. So
yeah, it's situational, and it's going to be story-based.
I'd say that's a design flaw there as well. I mean, in my opinion.
I don't. I mean, if you take a prisoner, for instance, that person has, they eat food, assuming you feed your prisoners. Right? A big assumption, perhaps. But assuming you feed your prisoners, they're going to eat food, therefore they add to your consumption. If they're adding to your consumption, they're on your caravans, they're taking up space, so they have to have a job, and basically this is a job that doesn't produce anything, and that's the job that prisoner fills. Another example would be a high and mighty, like you're traveling up through this village, and the DM wants to give you guys some extra money to balance things out, or whatever his reasoning is, and a noble wants to go ahead and pay you to transport him to the next village you're going to anyway. Awesome. He pays you 100 gold, you go up, he doesn't help you at all on the journey, he expects you to protect him and provide for him, and off you go. I think it allows for those flexibility that actually adds to the story.
Well, I agree, but I think that there should be, in the design of the mechanic, there should be a baseline average that's applied. I think that if there's a prisoner, perhaps there should be a prisoner entry.
Well, it's sort of a catch-all, though. I mean, I can't... If I'm designing a system, I can't think of everything your character is going to do. Your game, your own.
Well, right, but
just so having a catch-all lets those...
Sure, but the catch-all has to be educated by the DM. And I'm all for the DM educating things, but sure. I think that if we know that a unit of food is X amount of gold, and say, like, a cook, you know, reduces two, but then he eats one himself, and so mm-hmm. on and so mm-hmm. forth, saying that, per normal passengers, non-prisoner passengers, or just do what I said and divide it and add a prisoner entry, a normal passenger pays 5 gold a month. Which I think makes sense. If you're going to ride the train, you need to pay for your passage. So then,
they're then setting the price for you as to what you can charge.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And I guess I'd rather have that educated through roleplay. I want a dicker.
Well, but if we go down that road, all of this is kind of thrown to the wind. Do you feed your passenger in these mechanics? I mean, do you feed your prisoner in these mechanics? You don't have an ability not to. Can I just use charm spells to alter the feelings of the caravan in this mechanic? I can't do that. So I'm saying that if we know there's all these things that are reducing money, and we're paying money for someone to do a job, I'm paying him 10 gold to drive the wagon, I'm paying him 10 gold to do X, Y, or Z, this guy's paying me 5 gold to take up space and food and not do anything else.
And it costs a silver a mile or whatever.
Or whatnot. I'm not sure. How much does it cost to feed this guy per month? Is it one unit?
It would be one unit of food, so there'd be, I mean, it's 30-ish stores, or 30 units of food, roughly, I mean.
Right.
And then there's 10 units of food per store, so you would have to pay for 3 stores at 15 gold a pop.
For this one person.
I think that's right. For that one person. If they were there for a month, they're costing you 15 gold.
They're costing. So the passenger should be paying 20 gold. The passenger should be paying for what he eats and giving you 5 gold because you're not actually gaining any benefit from him.
Yeah, and the problem is, does he want protection? Is that why he's signing up? Well, I had to pay for 100 gold per frickin' guard. I want a little more. And this is the only caravan that's willing to go over the crown of the world, not just, you know, from... Like,
I get where you're going. We could sell this for a lot more than 5 gold, but sure. I'm saying that because there's
nothing written
in the mechanic at all, really gives no incentive to want to have a passenger in the first place, in my opinion.
Yeah, other than it's just in the game. So I think if you go through the actual I'm guessing if you go through the actual modules, you could pick someone up who does have an amount they're willing to pay to go from point A to point B.
I guess that makes sense. Sure.
And it's going to be different depending on how far that point is. It's going to be different depending on the dangers. If you're higher level, it's more dangerous, that sort of thing.
Good point.
Yeah. I think your point's well made, though. Moving on, though, scouts. Scouts also give you a plus one circumstance bonus to security check, or provide 2 units of provisions in a day's work. They focus on hunting, and they don't take any consumption themselves when they're doing that. So a scout is much better than a cook if they're providing food, and the problem is that they cost 100 gold. So they're a lot more expensive, but again, if you can have Shalelu running out there hunting for you, that might be a good way to down how much food you have to have.
If you have her in your party anyway, then I would say that's the best job for those people to do if you have...
Well, unless you want her guarding, or, you know, she, I think, can only... She can only be a guard, passenger, or scout. I love that they write passenger for those guys. Nah, I don't want you guarding or scouting. You're too fragile. You get to be a passenger. Right up here with me, Shalelu. I'm the driver. How you doing? Those are some big moves you got.
Oh, he went there. But I suppose the way you'd really have to look at it is, what are they saving for those two yes. units of food versus the 100 that you're paying? If you have a party member that can double as that, and you're already maxed out in your guards.
Again, a unit of food per month, it gets out to 15 gold.
So 30, so you're not netting anything by actually hiring the scout. Yeah. Right, so if he's there, it's a bonus. If not, don't hire a scout.
Not to hunt for you.
To hunt for you, right.
Unless you can't... So say you know it's going to... You can only carry, say, 32 stores of food. 320 days worth of food for a single person divided by the number of people you have in your caravan. And you know there's not enough stops between where you are and your next location to buy more food. And you're not going to make it based on what you can carry. It might be worth it then to have scouts who are... dropping that consumption so that you can actually make it to your next location. But not necessarily the whole way. So,
fair point.
You know, figure out how long you need them for, how long you need them out there doing that to be able to do it. Or maybe you think you're going to make it, but man, you're just squeezing by, and then all of a sudden you get attacked by ogres, you kill them, you take their stuff, because that's what you do to things you kill, and you're like, man, I need room to store the stuff I just stole. And, I mean, liberated. So I'm going to have to throw away some food or give it to people or whatever. But that means I'm going to have someone out scouting to replace that food for at least 1 day or 3 days or 4 days or whatever. Whatever the total is you need to do to replace that food, you could have a scout do that. Now you're able to carry the stuff that's worth 400 gold in the place of that food that cost you 5 gold that you threw. Totally worth it. So it's a great option to have, but yeah, I wouldn't be hiring these guys just because you want to lower your food consumption. Next one's probably my favorite of all the jobs. It's the spellcaster. Spellcaster is anyone who can cast spells, strangely enough. And they count as either an entertainer, guard, guide, healer, or scout, regardless of whether or not they meet the requirements for that job. So basically, in this rule set, wizards can indeed do anything. I love that. I love that they finally put it in there. They might as well just spell it out, wizards rock. That's what this is saying to me.
I'll blow it up and frame that for you.
Excellent. The only catch here, you can't hire a wizard because they're too awesome. And so you have to either, a PC or an NPC would have to fill this role. But it's great if you don't want to, you know, waste ranks on what those little, you know...
skills.
Plebeians do. So you just cast your spells, you can do anything as good as they can. And just take that, rogue. But that's basically what a wizard is. So it's nice, it's a pinch hit. Again, you can only have +5 circumstance from any of the jobs, so even if you have the spellcaster adding stuff in, you still can't exceed that max unless you take feats to make it go higher. Next, we have the trader. This is how you sell stuff when you get to the city. Because you're in the city, you don't necessarily have to have your people doing the same stuff you did on the road, so you make as many as you can traders. Sell any trade goods you brought with you, which is great. You're not going to make much money this way. They have to have ranks in bluff, diplomacy, or profession merchant to be a trader. So it's a great thing to even just dip 1 point into. They're not bad skills to have anyway. I mean, sure. 1 rank in diplomacy means you can aid other on diplomacy checks, which is great for the rest of the game, and now you can sell stuff. it's a good thing to have. You're not going to make a lot of money on it, but it's fine. Then finally you have the Wainwright. This is where we talk about the actual repairs. The Wainwright is anyone who has at least one rank in either craft carpentry, profession engineer, or profession Wainwright. You can have up to 5 of these guys working on your wagon at any time, or wagon train, or say your caravan. Each one who wants to make a repair check, though, uses one cargo unit of repair materials. Not horrifically expensive. Cargo unit of repair materials is 25 gold. The big thing here is you have to decide how many of these you're taking with you when you leave, and you know, how often am I going to get attacked, how many of these do I have to do. There are ways to scrounge them up and stuff later.
So it's like an Oregon Trail. Do I keep my money, do I buy more food, or am I buying extra axles and wheels?
Exactly. Yeah, it's Oregon Trail, absolutely. Right back to the original source. But that's basically the jobs. So I'm gonna try to speed it up just a little bit here as we go into caravan equipment, unless you had any other comments on the jobs.
No, they're pretty handy.
Okay. Caravan equipment is stuff that's going to take up space in your wagon, just like we talked about with, you know, you have to decide if you want food or repair materials. All of these are going to take up some amount of space and give you some benefit for having them. So the first one is a ballista. This gives you a bonus to attack. Generally, I mean, it's not bad. There's nothing wrong with attack, but in our playtests, our attack was so high, it really didn't matter that much.
Right, well, we needed something that buffs damage, and if it's not...
And it doesn't buff damage, right. Yeah. And it takes 4 cargo units to mount one of these suckers on a...
wagon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's... Eh.
Pass.
Eh. Yeah, I mean, if you find, especially later in the game, maybe their ACs are getting higher and you need to really buff that to hit up, but until that happens, I don't... In my playtest of the first 2 adventures and the encounters that take place in them, it wouldn't have made any difference. Campsite traps, on the other hand, which take 2 cargo spaces, cost 1,000 gold. I actually really like. I would highly suggest that you have these by the second adventure. 1,000 gold's a big investment for the very first one, and there's an encounter in the second one in which people sneak into the fog, steal your shit if you don't make a security check. Having bells and alarm spells and whatnot out there gives you a +4 bonus on security checks to avoid being surprised, and then you get a +4 bonus on attack for the first round. Again, the attack doesn't help damage. Sure wish it did. So that's not all that big a deal, but the surprise check when camped is actually pretty nice because of that one encounter, so I do think it's worth the money, and you can keep reusing it. It's not like it goes away
right.
every time it's used. Cold weather gear is, it basically lets you avoid detrimental effects of cold weather. You want this by the end of the second adventure when you travel into the frozen north. You're going up, it's, you know, summer nice time when you're getting into the land of the Lindorm Kings, but as you're heading up over the crown of the world, apparently it gets really cold in the Arctic.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, so you definitely want that by the end of the second adventure. Not that expensive. There's no reason not to get it. Cold weather clothing for everyone on your caravan makes sense, too. It's like 8 gold.
Sure.
So, yeah.
People will start tipping over halfway on the trail.
Yeah, so that way if you're in caravan time, you get these bonuses. If you're out of caravan time, they're wearing stuff and don't have to slice open a tauntaun and get inside and, you know, because that's, I'm assuming, what hauls your caravan. The enhanced undercarriages, this is one of the ways you speed up your wagon. If that's your plan, if that's what you want to do, is run away from things and get there as fast as possible, get these for every single wagon. Otherwise, skip them. It has to be on every wagon in the caravan to do anything. If you have even one wagon that can't go that fast, it's not worth it. So
that makes sense, weakest link.
Yeah, absolutely. So it just, you know, don't get it unless you're planning on going all out and speed's your thing. It's just not worth it otherwise. We talked about repair materials and stores already, so I won't go too much into those. Trade goods, this is the stuff you would, you know, it's metals, spices, clothing, wood, salt, that sort of thing. Anything you're going to trade when you get to the next encampment or town or whatever. There's nothing in here that talks about, like, I picked up in Sandpoint some awesome blown glass, and now I'm in Minkai, and, you know, I traveled halfway around the world, so this should be worth really good. You know, there's nothing in there that models that. It's not that great. If you have extra space on your caravan, by all means, fill it up. But it's not really something to worry about. You're not going to be a good trading caravan with these rules. Treasure I actually really like this one.
Really? You like treasure?
It's weird. I like treasure. It shines and sparkles.
I'm floored.
No, what I like about it is it's a way to model a mechanic that deals with all of those characters who loot every piece of leather armor from every ogre they kill, every half-broken spear from every goblin they kill. All of that has weight. This makes it so it actually takes up space. Every 50 pounds of treasure takes up one cargo unit. So at some point they may say, wow, we're out of space. Maybe we toss, we're down to where that 50-pound cargo unit is actually worth less than a trade good. Maybe we should throw out the goblin leather. But it kind of, instead of just people randomly walking around with all this stuff on their character sheet that no one asks about, it actually gives a mechanical way of tracking that and when you can sell it and how you can sell in towns and that sort of thing. And that's what I like about it. Other than that, it's just a, abstraction on treasure. You kill ogres, they drop 200-400 gold pieces, units of treasure, put them in your wagons and on you go, and it doesn't say what they are. But I do like that it tries to take that stuff where you strip down a dungeon and bring every single thing back. I got the door handles, they're made of glass, they're kind of blue, I saw that they sell well on eBay, so I'm taking them with me and I'm gonna sell them. This actually lets you deal with that, I guess, a little better. Finally, wagon reinforcements. These are actually really good. They take up only one cargo unit per wagon that you put it on. They cost 500 gold and they give you 10 extra hit points for that wagon.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about, most wagons are giving 20, 30 hit points. So this is
25 to 33% increase for a nominal amount of gold. I mean,
33 to 50, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not bad at all. This is, even right off the bat, I would consider this. That's a good way to go. And definitely, as you get more money, a great investment. So that's kind of all the stuff in general that you can carry on there. If you think of anything you carry in your caravan that fits into one of these categories, I really am saddened by the trade goods thing. It doesn't... I want to be able to trade shit. I think it'd be fun. And well, these rules just don't do it. So.
Sure, right. It just means that you have to separate what you actually found from the, quote, real encounters. And when you actually go to town, you have kind of a doubling of a non-role play and an actual role play where you just say that you are trading these, quote, trade goods, and then you go to the magic item shop or what have you and actually trade away
right.
The stuff that you found.
Yes. Yeah. No, I get it. And it's not the focus tedious, of the game. It's, sure. It's not sim cloth trader. It's, it's adventuring. So I get that. I do. I just can't help but be a little disappointed. So jumping into caravan feats, every level your caravan goes up, which is anytime your PCs go up, the caravan meets the same level as your PCs, except at every level, your caravan gets a feat. So you're going to get quite a few of these things.
Hold on. Changing my character's name. Caravan.
It says right here, I get a feat every level.
Caravan the Transmuter. That's canon now.
That's right, yeah. It's a great idea. All of you heard it here first. So it should be like Barry the Caravan or Sean the Caravan. Name it after us, as well as your children.
That'd be good.
Right.
Okay, so caravan feats.
Caravan feats. Yeah. So you got caravan toughness. Just like regular toughness, this is adding hit points. We just talked about hit points being good. It's a great thing if you don't have something else to take for feats. I probably will take it with my build after I get done doing more damage.
You should take it with your build.
Absolutely.
The bar, as we put it in other podcasts, I think that's safe to say that's the bar. If you don't have anything better to take, getting more hit points isn't a bad thing.
Absolutely. And you can take it once per number of wagons in your caravan. So you can have a max of... With other feats that increase the amount of stuff in your caravan, you can have 11 wagons. So you can take this feat 11 times if you really wanted to, which would be an extra 220 hit points to your caravan. It's a lot.
Nice.
So yeah, you're not running out of this, most likely. You're not likely to take it that many times, but I think you're precisely right. This is the
bar
extra grit of caravans.
Sure. I think we would probably, going from the playtest, and well, at least with the flytrap that we built, I think you would want to take the extra wagons as much as possible, correct? To get to that 11 wagons?
Once you're done taking extra damage, yeah.
Sure. Right. Out of the gate, you want to take the extra damage twice and then move on.
But yeah, I think so. So next we have Circle the Wagons. This one adds +4 to your AC, but to get it, you have to skip your first round of combat. That's tough. If you were at a point where you had high enough AC that circling your wagons would make you nigh unhittable, I'd be singing the praise of this thing to the high heavens, but you can't get there. You just can't. And it makes it not really that worth it to miss that, because we want to do as much damage. You're going to take a lot less damage total by just hitting him as hard as you can, as fast as you can, rather than trying to buff your AC. I like the concept.
But it's very cinematic and Western, but...
Right. I wish it worked.
Then it becomes a wasted feat if you're not going to use it.
Agreed. So. Next we have Courageous Crew, +2 on all resolve checks against fear effects, including resolve checks to resist a rout. I just don't find, going through and playtesting and doing stuff, I didn't find resolve made that much of a difference. I would suggest not really even worrying about resolve. Skip this feat, skip any other feat that does resolve. If resolve becomes an issue and unrest becomes an issue, throw some people into entertainers until you can get there. When you can afford it, buy a royal carriage, and that gives you a significant bonus to your resolve, and I don't think you'll probably need much more than that. By the time you're getting past the second adventure, if you find I'm wrong, bump it up a little, but I'd be really surprised if you need it up very high at all.
So basically what he's saying is ale and whores cures everything.
Ale and whores. Hells yeah. Then we have efficient consumption. It reduces your caravan's total consumption by 2. That is not nearly enough to make it worth it. Basically, that gives you an extra 10 gold a month. That is horrible. Do not take that. Do not take it, and if you're not sure, don't take it. efficient repairs, on the other hand, this gives you a +2 bonus on your security check rolls. If you got nothing else to do and you feel you're not coming anywhere near your hit points being tossed anyway, it doesn't hurt to get an extra 2 points on every repair roll you make, because that's 2 more hit points you heal every time you make a repair roll. I don't think it's a huge bonus though, so I'd probably probably still go toughness.
Right, given that we're trying to take our time anyway, we have the time to make those rolls.
Mm-hmm.
More hit points are going to be better than trying to heal the hit points you have a little bit faster.
Right, and 20 hit points versus 2 for every time you make this roll. This doesn't seem equal in feat quality.
Doesn't meet the bar.
Right. Enhanced Caravan, on the other, is actually the very first one I recommend you take. This is one of the only ways you can increase your base stats. We talk a lot about the secondary stats that are derived from the base ones, but if you want to raise your offense, defense, mobility, or morale, this is your way. And you need to do that if you want to take these other feats, because they all have requirements based on the primary stats, not the secondary stats. So if you want caravan toughness, you have to have a defensive 3. The only way you can get a defensive 3 is either this feat or assigning those initial 3 points you got when you first get your caravan. So it becomes an extremely important feat that you're probably going to be taking multiple times. And you can. The effects stack. There's no maximum other than you can't have more than 10 in any given score. This is a pretty good deal. This is generally, it gives you a +1 in any 2 of those primary stats. There's no other real way to pump your defense too much. So one of those 2 is probably going to be defense, even though I'm not a huge fan of the AC, as we've talked about over and over. It's still one of the only ways you can do it, so I'd probably be throwing it in there.
This sounds very much like a feat tax. It's almost the dodge feat, if you will. It gives you a very small bonus, but really what it's doing is opening up other things.
Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely a good way to look at it. Expert Travelers, these are good, and it's something I had a hard time modeling in how I was going to make my build, but it's a very good feat. It raises the maximum bonus you can get from Traveler jobs by +1. So if you want +6 instead of +5 from guards...
Everything.
Everything. So, it does to all of them. Every time you take it, you can only take it up 3 times. It's probably better than caravan toughness, so it probably beats the bar. Especially as your caravan gets bigger and you get those more wagons. it definitely, so you can have more people who have jobs.
And more named NPCs.
You're picking up in your adventures, that sort of thing. Then, yeah, I would... This is definitely a good thing to have. Extra wagons. We talked about wanting to pick up extra wagons when you can. This is the only way you can do it. It raises your maximum number of wagons in your caravan by 2. It's good, solid stuff. Having more wagons means more hit points. Means more people who have jobs.
More carrying capacity.
More carrying capacity. It does mean more consumption, that sort of thing, but it's outweighed by what you're hauling. So, yeah, it's a good thing. Again, I would focus immediately on doing as much damage as you can, and then it's probably buffing up your hit points. More wagons buff up your hit points.
Even empty wagons or wagons with things that we can ditch, building the flytrap, modeling it from the beginning, we want to get into combat. We want to kill things and take their stuff. So the more wagons we have, the more we can load up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next we have Faster. It has one of the highest requirements of anything. You have to have a mobility of 5 to take this. And it increases your wagon speed by 4 miles a day. Again, unless you're wanting to max out your speed, it's horrible. Just don't do it unless that's what you're trying to do, which isn't what we recommend. Next we have First Strike. This is actually one of the ones I would recommend. So there's 3 feats that are going to add to damage. First Strike is one of them. It raises your damage by 4 points during the first round only. So it's only that initial bolus of damage, but it is at least more damage, and there's not a lot of ways to add damage. It's probably the worst of the ones that add damage to your caravan, so it's probably going to be the last one, but because it adds damage, I am going to recommend taking it. Next is Increased Damage. This is your bread and butter. This is what you want right out the chute. I wouldn't take it to second level just because it has, again, one of the highest prerequisites of anything. You have to have an offense 5. My recommendation is this is what you want to get to as quickly as possible. So put your initial 3 points you get into offense. That puts you up to 4. Your very first feat you take, you increase it by another 1. You're now at 5, so second level you can get this.
Right. We can't actually take it until second level.
Right.
Yes.
Third level, I would suggest taking this. Fourth level, this.
Again, yes.
You can only have it 3 times, so then you're done. But it to me, is the best feat to take.
Sure.
And interestingly, that means proportionally at fourth level, you're probably doing the most damage out of any time in your caravanning career, proportionally, because they're going
to have... While you're ahead, take over the Lynn on Kings.
That's right. That's right. Well, I think fourth would be the end of the first adventure. So you're just hosing through goblins. And you can one-shot goblins with that easy. I was doing it definitely in my playtest. You might take a little damage because it does it at the same time, and we'll get into that in combat. But you're just hosing through your opponents. It's good stuff. Lucky Caravan. Once per week, you get to roll twice on attack, security, or resolve checks. Rolling twice is good. It's not bad, especially with some of those security checks. You already have this going on with your fortune teller. Yeah, I guess another roll is not a bad thing. Because there's going to be those situations where you just don't want to fail.
Well, what I see happening is by the time you get through the things, like the increased damage and the increasing the stats on your caravan and making your travelers expert, by the time you kind of clear the things that seem to be fairly necessary, you're reaching about halfway through the game. I mean, you're really up there towards 10th level by the time you've taken all the things that we're saying is you really, really necessary, kind of have to take type of things.
Yeah.
There's at least 6 or 7 of those.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Merchant Mastery, +5 on your resolve checks to make money on trade goods. Even if you're buffing up this resolve check as much as you can, you're not going to make a lot of money on the trade goods, so it's just not worth it. I wish it was. James Jacobs on the boards actually makes a suggestion to have a feat that makes it like a x5 amount of gold you make on it, if that's something you want to do. So if someone wants to make a trading caravan, they could have, you know, a feat that has like a morale 5 requirement and a x5 on all your sales profits or something. But it's not in here, so I'm not going to include that, and it just doesn't work well. So I'm unimpressed with this feat. Only 3 more here. We have Reckless Tactics. This is like Power Attack. You're getting a -2 to AC, +2 to your attacks, and +2 to damage, making it one of the other ways you can get more damage. Because it's more than just the first round, it makes it better than First Strike. However, increased damage gives you a plus 1d6 damage. That's an average of 3.5 per feat, whereas this is an average of 2 per feat. So I would take your 3 increased damages first. This is probably going to be right after those. Next up, we have Scavengers. This one actually interested me. I didn't end up taking it anywhere in my build. Once per week, you can make a security check, DC 15, to find one cargo unit of repair materials. If you're having to make a lot of repairs and you're running out of repair materials, it'd be a good thing. And even if you're not, you're filling up your wagons as you're traveling because you're emptying them from eating stuff. So it's not a bad deal, but I don't think it's really that big a deal. So it probably is not going to make my list, but I want to like it. Probably not going to take it. And finally, Terrain Mastery. Plus 2 to all security checks made in a specific type of terrain. These are the same as a ranger's favorite terrain. So you're really good in the tundra. You're really good in the forest at not getting ambushed and surviving encounters and that sort of thing. And apparently fixing yourself if you're in the forest or tundra, that sort of thing. Not that great a feat to me. It's not going to beat out getting more hit points. So that's really all of our feats and the stuff you need to build a caravan. The caravan combat itself, I think I'll jump forward to. Alright, so caravan combat takes place in either active or while camped. If you're camped, you're going to have to make a security check to see if you're surprised or not. That's going to make a difference in the first round only. If you're surprised, take a -2 on attack, -2 to AC for the first round. Not that huge a deal, but we're buffing up security for other reasons, so it's great to make that check. Either way, then, after that, you both go ahead and roll the hit, just like you normally would against the other person's AC, and you roll your damage if you hit. There's no initiative. It's not one person than the other, so you can't one-shot those goblins and then never take damage yourself. They still get their shots off. The amount of damage you do, again, is your level of your caravan plus 1d6. And so you're doing one extra point of damage a level, but if you look at the encounters, they're scaling much faster than that. So you definitely want to pump up your damage as fast as possible. And that's kind of really what there is to the combat. If the enemy is reduced to zero, they're disbanded. They're not necessarily all killed or slaughtered to a man, but they're disbanded, and you get to steal their stuff. That's what it's all about here in our fly trap, where we want to take their stuff, have that be the way that the caravan's supporting itself. So, obviously, reducing them to zero is what you need to do. However, if you're reduced to zero, and you have a lot more hit points than they do typically, but if you're reduced to zero because you didn't repair enough or whatever, you got really bad luck on the rolls and you got attacked a bunch in a row, the significant NPCs in the caravan are reduced to 1d20 minus 5 hit points, not to exceed the maximum number of hit points that they have. So they can really be hurt bad by this, but probably aren't going to die. Characters are reduced to, if they're reduced to negative hit points, they're dying and need swift attention. If they don't have names, they're dead. If they weren't good enough, dead. They're red shirts. All of your drivers, all of your cooks, they all come with red shirts and will die. All your stuff you had in your wagons can be looted and taken away. The campaign is not necessarily over because you can wander onto the next city, build a new campaign or a new caravan, getting your with your own money and everything. But it's a pretty significant blow, certainly. Ideally, don't let this happen. Make sure you're repairing yourself. Make sure you're doing what you can to stop them from hitting you. And the best way to do that is to hit them hard fast.
Dying blows. I get it. From what I remember when we play tested a while back there, I got the feeling that these rules were very streamlined, very easy to play with, if not a little simplistic, and a little bit kind of monotonous with just the back and forth, rolling, and then they die before we die.
So it is definitely simplistic, and I think the point was to make a minigame, and you don't want the rules of a minigame to overshadow the actual game. You're here to play Pathfinder, and if you have a minigame that overshadows the Pathfinder, then it defeats its own purpose, I think. And so it does a good job of being a good minigame without overshadowing things, but it doesn't have much breadth or depth to it. It's just a minigame. And it doesn't make me think of role-playing situations much.
See, for me, I just have to ask the question, if I'm here to play Pathfinder, why am I playing a minigame? In my mind, these rules, while good, while streamlined and fun to dink around with, they're almost kind of like the obligatory, we can't require people to buy Ultimate Combat and have the actual vehicle rules, so we're going to put a streamlined version in the module.
Yeah.
Which I think is
although
fine.
These caravan rules took up more page counts than did
the vehicle rules.
Yeah.
Right. But those appear in Ultimate Combat, though.
Sure.
Which they're not going to include in this module.
Well, but they could, because, I mean, they release all the rule sets on the PRD, the Pathfinder Resource Document, for free online. So, why not? Why not also put it in there if you wanted to? It don't hurt anything. To me, so, I guess getting back to the feel it gives me, it doesn't give me the feel of an epic journey. It gives me the little mini game.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, the dot, 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 flash, 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 now you're in a fight, roll a couple quick things, you're out of the fight, dot, 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 you made it to town. It doesn't feel like an epic journey, and I think that was one of the goals of the adventure path, was to be this epic journey across the top of the world into these new uncharted lands, and here's how you're going to do it, and by the way, it doesn't feel epic. To me, it kind of fails. So while it succeeds in being the minigame it was supposed to be, putting a minigame there fails the adventure path.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and risk being tomatoed and say that I think that this is kind of the afterbirth from Kingmaker. They did such a good job with that module.
Yes.
Won so many accolades that they were basically like,
let's try again
and see if we can make a new mini game. But instead of having a system that tracks what the players are doing out of necessity to keep it balanced and have it make sense, this creates more work that, in my mind, disconnects the player from the role play. I would much rather, whether I was playing in Jade Regent or running Jade Regent or playing slash running a game that incorporated a similar type of theme, I would much rather use these nice new shiny vehicle rules and kind of do what Sean does, secretly pre-roll the random encounters, decide there's going to be goblins here, there, or wherever, or if someone's trying to steal their stuff, or if it's ogres or what have you, and then actually have an encounter for it. Now, whether I adjust by running on a slower XP slot or taking out some of the obligatory, XP buffing encounters that are worked into every module and moving those around. To me, I think that role-playing that awesome chase scene or hopping from wagon to wagon as the bandits are trying to veer you off into the woods or
whatever. There's so many awesome encounters that you could do.
Right.
That this won't do, but the vehicle rules would.
Exactly.
And they let you do it with the characters you built and wanted to play and you showed up to play with the first place.
Exactly.
I can't agree enough.
Right, and you're not forcing people to be a mayor if they didn't sign up for that.
Yep.
And if you as the DM want to reward them, you can give those ogres or those bandits whatever equipment you want them to find.
Yes.
So
yeah, I think, to me, that's a better way to run Jade Regent, is to use the vehicle rules, make some exciting travel. I mean, the travel can't just be something you're skipping over. It has to be part of the focus of the campaign that makes it fun, so that at the end of that campaign, they don't just remember every time they went and cleared out a dungeon or a castle. They remember this epic journey they went on. I mean, yeah, we all read Lord of the Rings and remember how much they walked, but it was an epic journey. It made us think of that epic journey, and that was one of the things that this adventure path is trying to bring out in a D&D game, or a Pathfinder game, I should say. It's tough to do it with this. So I guess, switching it around for a second, if you have a DM, he wants to run this, he doesn't have Ultimate Combat, he doesn't have those vehicle rules, but he wants to use these rules while still making that epic feel, what would your recommendation be? How would he do that?
Again, well, I say this a lot, but it just depends on what the players really want to do. I mean, this could be fun if the players sign up for it. If they want to babysit and hire NPCs and manage these jobs, if they enjoy the minigame, then that's all well and good.
Which is a good point, since it's in the player's guide.
Sure.
they know up front that this is going to be part of it. They but can if they, read the rules, get to know it, get to like it. It's right. possible.
But if they don't, if they would rather just keep it kind of zoomed in, if you will, my suggestion, if you don't have the vehicle rules, is just do what every good DM does and just make it up as you go along.
Yeah.
Just guess what that wagon should be going, you know, as far as speed based on the animals that are carrying, you know, pulling it.
Yeah.
Guess on the hardness of the vehicle if the player or the bad guys are attacking it, or use the hardness based on the materials that are in the core rule book, and just yes. do your best. But
and the vehicle's rules are just an extrapolation of existing rules.
Absolutely.
There's no reason you couldn't just make those extrapolations
right.
yourself.
Right. Really what the vehicle rules encompass is just the mechanics for the movement, turning, and if you're not paying attention, where do your cows go?
Right.
And
then how to steer different types of vehicles.
Right. I would almost, I mean, while I think that a good DM could probably wing it, really the rules are so small. I mean, borrow Ultimate Combat from someone.
Read through it once and
read yeah, through it yeah. once, and then from there you can just kind of wing it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the caravan rules are bad. They do what they intended to do. They work. There's some logistical problems. There's some things that, you know, some things that I think they forgot about when they made it.
Sure.
Ultimately, it does its job. I just don't think what it's doing is fun. I don't think that the time you're going to put into this at your gaming table during your session is going to net you the role-playing enjoyment rewards, if you will,
yeah.
than just playing out another fun random combat.
However, if we haven't convinced you to do that, if you just you don't care what we think. No, if you're going to use this, though, I'm going to give it out advice that I really don't ever give very often. You need to have descriptive paragraphs that you're feeding your players to talk about that epic journey. You need something that makes them feel like they understand the journey they went on, and it took a long time. And there's a lot of players, if you read them one paragraph of text, absolutely feel like it took a long time. So I guess by reading that text to them, you are giving that impression. Make sure it's good text, and it's descriptive and interesting and gives that feel, but that's going to be your best shot. That and buy the map pack, have the actual map, do the dot, 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 like the beginning of Indiana Jones. And I think that's really your best shot for trying to get that feel across. But I really would recommend getting Ultimate Combat and running it that way.
And when you're going over the spine of the world, make sure to turn down your AC. I know we're coming into winter. It'll be the middle of December by the time you get there. But just crank the AC. Really make your players feel like they're in the snow.
I like it.
Yeah.
As someone who drives around in winter when it's snowy with my AC on, I don't have a problem with that. But a lot of people would get cold. So yeah, that's actually not a bad call.
It's also a way to keep the girlfriend tag-alongs from hanging out at the table.
So I think that's all I have then on our caravans and vehicles episode here. Do you have anything else you wanted to go over?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up. When we first started approaching this, I thought going into this that they would work more in unison, and it turns out that it's really kind of one or the other.
Yes.
Which makes me sad in a way. But, we take the hit for you guys. We're doing the hard job, so now you guys can make an informed decision and decide which way you want to go.
From there, whether you're a player or a DM. Because if you're a GM, I should say, if you're a player and you're playing Jade Regent and your GM is going to run this, then you don't have a choice. You're going to be playing the caravan. At least you know how it works and you know how to make it successful, and have a good time. Do the best you can with it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for tuning in, and we will talk to you again next time.
Catch you later.
The Gamer's Guide to Pathfinder. Dun, dun, dun!